Well, I have a whole series of sermons coming along on punctuation. I'm another tragic victim of having read Eats, Shoots, and Leaves. So that's why there's this, my way or the highway, where's the question mark? Because it could be a question, my way or the highway? But I think that our default position in our assertive civilization is to understand it as an imperative. It's my way or the highway. You're going to be with me or you're going to be against me. That the world is bifurcated into a whole bunch of dichotomies that are right, wrong, win, lose, easy, simplified, simplistic categories. And I understand. I want the world to be simple. I want the world to be clear. Not knowing what is right, not knowing when to hold them and when to fold them, is difficult. It's easier if somebody tells you what to do. And the great irony and paradox, I think, of our time is that as our world gets more and more complex, as issues become more difficult, as we get more and more information, some of us, or part of all of us, want to flee from the complexity and to simplify and oversimplify because a nuanced position, a position that takes in different gradations is difficult. It's anxiety-producing. Almost all of us can deal with reality, however stark, but choices and choices of moral responsibility, of political positions, of faith positions, in every area of our lives, we would like our world to be simpler, more easily understood, more with the sharp contrast of black and white, rather than those wide, fuzzy grays that we often find ourselves in from the philosophically liberal perspective. One of the great advantages of any kind of fundamentalism, whether it's religious or political, is that you don't have to worry an awful lot about the nuances and about the answers. The categories are really pretty much out there. You are good or you are evil. You are with me or you are against me. You are saved or you are damned. I would love to have an idiot's guide to life, or as my generation called it, the Cliff Notes, to be able to get through all of the really difficult moral, intellectual, and political issues that bedevil my soul at 3 o'clock in the morning. I do understand the desire for a simple world, but I can't live there. I want to visit it, I want to flee to it every once in a while, but I can't live there. Some years ago, in this pulpit, we had Hugh Hewitt, the political commentator as well as lawyer and law school teacher, and from his viewpoint, politically and religiously, the world's a pretty simple place. And he said, well, you know, the choice, dear Unitarian Universalists, is that Jesus was either the Son of God or the biggest liar of all time. Now, this stuck me in an unusual and uncomfortable position, which was not that I had nothing to say, but that I had nothing that a decent host could say, because I think that decency is sometimes more important than scoring points, but I'm not always sure. I'm not always sure when or what the right call is. Because on the face of it, this is just, I'm going to use as an example, of how otherwise intelligent people can simplify and oversimplify an issue into, in my view, stupidity. that have become so simple that it's simple-minded. So he says, here are the alternatives. It's either this or it's that. Where in his scriptures does it say that? Where is that stark choice given in any kind of plausible hermeneutical exegesis? All these words are look-upable and Google-able, but I can't spell them, so it doesn't make much difference. Where is that in Scripture? Well, he says, the only way to the Father is through me, and he calls God my Father. Not at all unusual, given the circumstances, that God was everybody's father in the Middle Eastern religions of that time. Or that when asked the question, are you the Messiah? He answers, thou hast said it. Could that possibly be open to interpretation? It was not a clear messianic claim. How about, are you the king of the Jews? Different word for Messiah. It's a political, not a theological question. All of these are open to interpretation. It isn't clear. The text is opaque. So to give just that alternative is, in a sense, to say, take my reading, take Nicaea and accept Nicaea or reject it. Well, what about the liar part? I don't know any text that makes the alternative being a liar, because I don't see the claim clearly made. Am I just playing with words? Well, a little bit, but to a point. And the point is that in every important area of our lives, we are making interpretations. We are choosing what to let grow and what to prune, what to take as complex, what to take as simple. And we need to be responsible for our own interpretations and our own choices, and not just accept somebody else's black and white view of what the universe is and is about, and what is the good and what is the bad and what is the decent and what is the indecent, and who are the saved and who are the damned, assuming that you find those words at all useful. I'm not sure that I find them particularly useful. I even have trouble, and I get into Clintonian parsing, even on the big questions of deism and theism and how useful the words are, because I don't know. And I don't know seems to be almost as difficult a thing for human beings to say as, whoops, I was wrong. Not the passive voice, mistakes were made, but I was wrong. And it's hard to do. It's hard to do because we know that we have to act in the world. And we know that the world is complex, and we know that we cannot know all of the ramifications of our choices. So as I mentioned last week, life is an incomplete information problem that calls upon us to do our best, that calls upon us to examine our world, that calls upon us not to model oversimplification and this black and white, easy view of people and of politics and of religions. And we see this happening in every area of our lives. And we see it happening both on the left and on the right. And we see it happening in every religious group. It's not simply those Christian fundamentalist evangelicals out there who want to talk about the rapture and can't wait for Jesus to come back and do the urban renewal program of wiping everything out and building it again in the sky. It's not simply them, and it's not simply the Wahhabis who want to go back to an 8th century religion of Muhammad and wipe out modernity and have clear answers of moral and immoral. It's also in the Jewish community where there's a new film out that shows a particular group that wants to flee the Gentile world and what it thinks of as the modern world, and sees the corrupting influences of cities, of what we call civilization, of video games, of television, of movies. This ultra-Jewish group is in essential agreement in its worldview with the ultra-fundamentalists of the Taliban, and in essential worldview with the ultra-fundamentalists of the millennialists and the other fundamentalist Christian groups who would wipe out the corruption and the decadence that they see in our world. Well, I see that corruption and decadence also. I go to the same movies. I understand why they want to flee, just as I understand why people want simple answers. But bumper stickers for theology, bumper stickers for politics, bumper stickers for complex issues are crippling to human intelligence and reason and progress in all areas, religious, political, and even in the world of art. Is Oedipus a free agent, or is he a puppet of the gods? I've got to have your answer. Your soul may depend on it. Is Mona Lisa smiling, or is it simply gas? What's your stand? It's A, B, C, or D, and you don't get into grad school with the wrong answer. Is Hamlet clever, or is he weak? We want it all to be easy. One of the interesting, ironic conjunctions of history is that after I had finished the second draft of this sermon, I got the news that Ronald Reagan had finally died, had finally stopped dying, and that awakened in me many thoughts and many feelings. One of the great ironies, of course, I immediately realized, is that Ronald Reagan was somebody who was criticized, justly in my view, for seeing the world in blacks and whites. And yet, me and my ilk have a tendency to see Ronald Reagan in blacks and in whites, as opposed to the more complex person and legacy who doesn't fit on to a bumper sticker as neatly as we would like him and all of our friends and all of our enemies and indeed even ourselves to fit neatly into the Procrustean bed of our own predilections. I knew Ronald Reagan as a kid. Well, I was the kid. He was grown up at the time. We went to the same market, saw him often. I was struck by three things as a very young child. One, these remarkable glasses he wore that were Coke bottle glasses. I mean, the lenses were so thick. I don't know who got a hold of him, but somebody did some great work on his lenses when he went into politics. That was one thing. The other was his affability. He was extraordinarily outgoing, without being obnoxiously so, extraordinarily friendly to me as a child, without being condescending, and to my mother, whom he knew to be a Democratic National Committee woman, a member of the California Democratic Central Committee that Paul Ziffrin had organized, the president of the Brentwood Democratic Club, and they chatted amiably at the market whenever we ran into each other. Now, it is true that there was another connection. My Aunt Ida wrote for the trades and for the movie magazines and had done a number of articles on him, And he knew that connection, and she had written about him when he was married to Jane, and she had written about the great romance with Nancy. And maybe he was just acting friendly. But I've seen his movies. He wasn't much of an actor. I think it was who he was. People used to complain that Reagan had an unfair advantage as a politician because the camera liked him. That's post hoc proctor hoc. That's backwards. The camera liked him, which is why he was an actor. Like Jimmy Stewart, who had somewhat of a broader range, like John Wayne, who had as limited a range. Something in him came through the lens. Some sense of affability, some sense of confidence, some sense of genuineness. Whether it was real or not, it came through. And that was the disadvantage that other politicians had, disadvantages with which Gray Davis is more than familiar at the moment. And there are people whom the camera likes, who send something across time and space, and usually it is something real. I mentioned two things. The third thing that struck me about Ronald Reagan was that my mother ran out of gas on the then brand new San Diego freeway. And Ronnie and Nancy were driving by, and my mother was standing out of the car looking as if she felt pretty stupid and helpless, because she did. And Ronnie, recognizing her, stopped, picked her up, took the Sunset exit, went to Barrington and Sunset, got 5 gallons of gas, went north and exit, got off, came back on south, took Mom and the gas to the car, poured the gas in the car, made sure the car started, and then they went their separate ways. I thought about that gas as I was being gassed in Spal Plaza in 1969 on Ronald Reagan's orders. Not me personally. I mean, it's a Yossarian kind of thing. Yeah, no, they're trying to gas everyone. It's not just you, John. But but I remembered the act of kindness, and I was never able to take out the brush and paint saved, damned. I was never, nor was my mother, as far as I know, ever able to vote for him, but neither was I ready to take a complex human being who had good personal qualities and bad personal qualities and simplify and oversimplify him into the representation of all that I disagreed with, because there were things commendable too in his nature, as there are in the best of people and there are in the worst of people. We want so badly to divide the world into the decent and the indecent, and I guess there are people who are saints, and I guess there are people who are virtually totally evil. But I think the vast majority of people have what is called Swiss cheese, which is that we have certain holes and certain that we fall through in our own personalities and in our own selves, that none of us is perfect. And I don't personally know anyone whose life would fit on a bumper sticker. I think that our world and our people and art and creation and the important issues with which we must engage are not amenable to the simple right-wrong, to the simple black-white. They are worth the pain of wrestling with. And instead of oversimplifying and going to the point of arrogance where I am right and it's my way or the highway, I believe we should be trying to do exactly the opposite. And undertaking action with fear and trembling, with some sense not of arrogance but of humility, as we are called to engage the world. My way or the highway? No, my way or the highway. Let's walk along together for a while on the same road. Come to a fork, maybe we'll tarry, maybe we'll talk, maybe we'll sit down and discuss it. Maybe we'll have to part company and go our own separate ways, as my mother and Juan went off to their different political and physical destinies. But there are many roads, and we have many opportunities of accompanying each other on our journey and being good company, even when the roads and we have to diverge. My way or the highway? Let's wander together for a while.